Hi. Welcome. All right. So I've been ejected out of my home for the day, which is why you see a different me in a different setting. I'm at my sister-in-law's house, and they've got a dog. Hopefully all will be quiet here. Just mentioning it as we move in. It's been one of those days, I'll say that. I'm really excited for our call today. We are going to not only start a new module, our Befriend Your Fear module, but really start the next pillar in the program. So far in the program, we've really been working through each of the foundational skills for transformation and for coaching. And in the next pillar, now, first of all, we're stepping firmly into all of the mastery work, but we've got two pillars in mastery. The first pillar, which will last us quite a long time, we're going to be looking at many different techniques and entry points into supporting our clients with their blocks, with the places where they get stuck and held up. And the first is befriend your fear. We're going to be looking at fear. This module is going to take us a couple of sessions. We'll be doing training this session and next session. And then we'll be doing some demoing from there. Before we jump in to all of that, a couple of housekeeping pieces. So the first is the next round of the small group cohorts is starting. You should have received opt-in emails for it. Tomorrow is the last day to step in to let us know that you want to be part of the next round of the small group cohorts. There's one meeting in 2022 for it. It's next week. And then all the rest of the meetings are after the new year. What else do I want to say about that? There was a request or two about doing those calls on different times. And so I want to remind everyone that we do have a small group cohort meeting on a different day. And I always forget what day you all are meeting. But if you don't mind putting it in the chat, because there might be some, if you're open to new folks, that is. Or you can always start a small group cohort at a separate time, as Wednesdays at 1:30 Pacific. Anyway, so that's an alternative time. I think that's it on the small group cohorts. The other thing that I wanted to mention is starting in January, not the beginning of January, but as soon as we're done with the Befriend Your Fear module, we're going to have a couple of new folks joining us. These are people who are Sacred Depths graduates who they are moving on to Advanced Depth, which is kind of the next program after Sacred Depths. It's different somatic, kind of more advanced somatic techniques, if you will. And they, as part of that, they're going to be going through the mastery material again. It's a couple of people. They are incredible. I am really excited to welcome them to our container. I think they're going to add so much. It's more people to connect with and get different points of view from, and they're Sacred Depths people. So they kind of, there are people. So anyway, I'm really excited about that. Last quick logistics piece, just a reminder, we'll send out an email, but there is a bonus call that I added. I had told you about it with Kara Jones happening next Thursday. She's a graduate of Sacred Depths and Advanced Depths and Into the Depths. She's done all my programming, and she's just brilliant at helping soul-led entrepreneurs who are ethical bring more of yourself into your marketing and feel good about it and feel that it's really authentic. And so she'll be doing some training next week. Hopefully you can make it. If not, the recording will be in your member center. Any questions on any of the logistics pieces that I mentioned, or just any logistics questions that you have? What time is the bonus call? It is next Thursday from 3 to 4:30 Eastern. We'll send an email out about it. Okay. Okay. So let's jump in to looking at fear and the Befriend Your Fear process. On our call today, I'm going to lay out foundational principles that are really important for us to understand as practitioners when it comes to fear and working with fear and the nature of fear and human beings and fear, so that we have that understanding. And then next week, we'll get into each of the steps of the Befriend Your Fear process. We'll learn them. And then after that, I'll demo it and we'll pick it apart. And where I want to start, even before we get to fear, is to share something that you've heard me say before, but it's important to kind of keep on reinforcing it so that we can all really embody and understand this. The process of change, changing a fear, changing a habit, changing a belief, the process of change is a process. It's not a once and done. It doesn't just happen like that. This is, as you already know, one of my gripes with the transformation industry. There's all this talk about like changing in an instant, and it sets practitioners up for failure. And it sets clients up for failure, because that's not how human beings work. Yes, we can yield incredible breakthroughs quickly, but the deeper change, the deeper transformation is a process. And even when it looks like a quantum leap has happened in the matter of one session, in my experience, there is a whole history before that of small steps that get somebody to the tipping point, either in their work with me or in their work with others or in their life experience. It is a myth that like this quantum leap happens for human beings in an instant. And when we work, so some of this is about the difference between a breakthrough and a transformation for sure. Some of this is, as I've shared with you before, the way that I've really seen human beings change is that we will work with them in a session. They'll have a breakthrough or like a cluster of breakthroughs and new awarenesses, new ideas, new feeling, you know, whatever it is. And that breakthrough creates an opening for your client. And in that opening, there is motivation and inspiration and more willingness to move forward. And we want to capitalize on that. We want to like have an action step or a couple of action steps coming out of the session because of that opening. But more often than not, what happens for folks is after the session, that kind of big doorway opening, it kind of like, it starts to close a little and close a little until it's like, there's light being let through, right? But if we don't do anything about it, it's not that the door shuts closed completely again, but it doesn't stay as wide open as it was. And that's why we have ongoing sessions to continue to reinforce the breakthroughs, to come back to the new feelings, to the new ideas, to the new beliefs, to activate all of it on the four levels, to add another new breakthrough to it. So the door opens back up again, more action, forward action can be taken. And then maybe the next time it starts to close again, but it doesn't close as much as it did the first time, right? And that's how the process of change goes. Along these lines, when we're working with a client on long-lasting change, sometimes we might first come at it with a befriend your fear process, like we're going to be learning over these next weeks, and we open up a fear, and there's new awarenesses and new opportunity in the nervous system to tolerate a discomfort, et cetera. And the next session, we might come back to that same befriend your fear process, or then we might come at it by looking at a resistance archetype, which we're going to be looking at in this over the next months. Or we might come back at it with belief work and rewiring negative thought patterns. Or then maybe after that, we'll look at the myth of perfection. So it's kind of like we're chipping away at it to continue to embody the breakthroughs and embody the breakthroughs over time while taking outer action in between the sessions to reinforce all of the openings as well, to shepherd the change and to also move the client towards the outer goals that they want to be taking. To me, even though this isn't maybe as sexy as like quantum leap, change in an instant, I don't know, like maybe it's even sexier in a way, because it's how human beings actually operate. It takes into consideration who we are as humans and our messiness and how we really operate. The more that as practitioners, we can understand this, not only does it allow us to then put it into practice in our client work, but it helps us to normalize this for our clients. It helps us to set this up when they come in to work with us. It helps our marketing to be more ethical and in integrity as well when we talk about the process that our clients will go through when they work with us and how they'll achieve the results that they achieve. And let me pause there. What is sparking for you around this? What is feeling important? What are you seeing? Angie.
I just spent 4 days at kind of what would be considered like a transformational seminar, right? And while I was there, I was able to kind of see it for exactly what it was, yet I found myself continuing to like have these breakthrough moments for myself. And so this feels really pertinent because I do remember getting to a point on like the last day where I knew a call to action was coming, right? And that they were going to try to sell something to everybody in the room. And you know, I felt sticky about it. It felt a little bit weird to me, but at the same time, I was experiencing these really kind of aha moments, transformational moments after one after the other. And it is exactly what you're saying. I mean, that window kind of closes a little bit in the days afterward. And so I think taking away from it for myself, even like, how do I now track my own progress through what I felt were really transformational moments? And it's not dissimilar from other things I've done in life. If I've sat through a plant medicine ceremony, you get all of this amazing, beautiful insight. But the further away from it you get, if you're not really careful about your integration and all of that, it falls off. And so it's feeling pretty potent and pretty on point for what I'm currently experiencing myself. And I'm still super grateful for the moments, but it's about how do I now usher myself through what my own resistances are that are going to come up in the coming days and weeks so that I can keep movement happening.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you're sharing and so well said. Those breakthroughs are really important and amazing, but it's really the harder work actually comes after that, the resistance to like what comes through and the breakthroughs usually comes after that. And whether we're tracking ourselves or in our work with clients, we really want to be aware of that and work that into the journey that we're taking our clients through. Good. Who else? What are you seeing? What's resonating? What's feeling important about this? I'd love to hear one more share. Anyone else want to share? What's feeling important?
Hi, Joanna, I'll chime in.
Great.
I just want to say I'm excited about this. Super duper excited about these next modules, the Befriend Your Fear and the Resistance. I have a practice myself where, and I'm hoping these are some tools that you'll teach us later at some point, and maybe I'm already doing them. I love to write love letters to my resistance. I do it every year for New Year's. Dear 2022, you know, it was a bust or whatever it was, and this is what was awesome. Dear 2023, I can't wait for ABCDEFG. And so oftentimes I'll sit down and write, and most recently I was having resistance against something and I didn't realize that there was a difference in my resistance. And as I'm talking about it, I'm kind of like drawing a blank, but something of, dear anxiety, I'm so sorry that I confused you for, I don't remember what it was, fear. You guys have such similar symptoms that I just completely missed you. I apologize for that. And this is what I'm going to do to, you know, correct that. Okay. And just the thought of that, I didn't even have to write it down. I will. It is my intention to write it down like in the next week or two because I've been processing it. But just the thought of processing that mentally is just like a, okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So I'm excited for this next process.
Yeah, so beautiful. And yes, absolutely. We're going to be this kind of the foundational pieces of what you're talking about. Like the befriending is exactly what we're going to be looking at in this module, resistance, all of it. Yes. Great. All right. Well, I think that's a great segue in to start talking about fear. So I developed this kind of term and concept of befriending your fear over 15 years ago after many encounters and experiences with my own fear, as well as with clients. And this idea of befriending fear is very different. It's changing now since when I first started teaching about it, but it's still very different than a lot of what you're going to see in the transformational industry about fear. Befriending fear is not conquering your fears. It is not slaying your fears. It is not destroying your fears. And stick with me on this one, it's not even letting go of your fears. We are not working to let go of our fears, and we're going to see why through our time together today. This is about becoming friends with the fear. It's a very different concept than the conquering, the slaying, the destroying, even the letting go of. We want to befriend our fears because if we ignore them, if we avoid them, if we criticize them, if we hate on them, if we fight them, if we try to destroy them, they often will become stronger, not smaller. They will often become stronger, not smaller. I always, whenever I share this piece, I always think about a cartoon that I saw when I was like 5 or 6 on Sesame Street. And in this cartoon, the sun and the wind were having a conversation, and they saw a man walking down the street who had a coat and a hat. And the wind says to the sun, "Hey, sun, I bet you that I'm stronger than you. I bet you I could get that coat and that hat off that man way quicker than you can." And the sun says, "Oh, yeah? Okay, I'm game. Let's try this out." And the wind goes first, and it blows, right? It tries by force to get the coat and the hat off the man. And it blows and it blows and it tries to get it off the man. But what happens? The man clings on even more tightly to the hat and the coat. And then finally the wind gives up and it's the sun's turn. And the sun doesn't try to fight the clothing off. The sun just shines and sends down love and warmth and shines and holds and sends down love and warmth until finally, on his own avail, the man decides to take off the hat and the coat. This is the difference between trying to destroy fear or vanquish fear or slay fear or conquer fear and becoming friends with the fear. So with that in mind, let's look at this principle. Very simple one that you probably already know, but a really important one. Fear is normal. Fear is common and it is 100% normal and expected. As practitioners, we want to expect, because this is human behavior, that fear of some sort is going to rear its head when a human being is about to step into something bigger or different for themselves. when you step into something bigger for yourself, it's most likely that some fears are going to come up. Fear is part of the up-leveling and expansion and evolution process for humans. There is nothing wrong with fear. I'm going to say that again. There is nothing wrong with fear. If you experience fear when you start going after something that you want, it doesn't mean that you can't have the thing that you want. It just means that you're a human being and you're experiencing fear because that's part of the process. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you or your client. It doesn't mean that you're not whole and complete. In our society, and unfortunately in the transformational industry, fear has been stigmatized and even pathologized. And so practitioners as well as clients see it as something that's wrong, as something to fight, as the enemy, as something has gone wrong here in the process. But that's not true. I'm going to say it again. The fear is totally normal. And I'm going to say this. It's healthy. Fear is healthy. It's there to protect us. The fear is there to protect us. Now, here's the thing. What oftentimes happens for human beings is that something has happened in the past, in the then and there, that has been or felt threatening to our survival. And because it happened in the past and then and there, we had different resources than we have in the here and now. And really, it could have been a threat to our survival. Then what happens is we get to the present moment, and there's something that looks similar to the threat of the then and there that shows up in the present. And we become unaware of the resources in the here and now. And the fear is there to protect us so that we survive. In this way, fear is kind of like a smoke detector. We need smoke detectors in our houses because there might be a fire and we need to be alerted to the fire so that we can do what we need to do, water, get out of the house, call the fire department, right? But what happens for us when we forget of the resources in the here and now is that that fire, that smoke detector is faulty. It's a little too sensitive. It goes off when we've burnt toast instead of when there's a legit fire in the house. So we need fear. It is healthy. It is part of our job as practitioners to support our clients to discern when it's a real fire in the house and when it's a faulty smoke, when it's toast. I told y'all I was not in my house. I think I have to move for a moment. So hold on one second. I'm so sorry about that. And I'm going to go upstairs. Okay. So I can stay down. Thanks. Sorry. Okay. So we want to be able to discern and support our clients to discern between the toast, the burnt toast, and the real fire. But we need the fear. We don't need to fix the fear. Instead, we want to assess if it's helpful or unhelpful. And in what ways is it helpful? And in what ways is it unhelpful? And then make the proper adjustments and reorientations around it. And for what it's worth, and you can see, check this out if this is true for you. I really believe this to be true. I don't believe that the fear ever goes away. That's because I don't think it's supposed to go away. I think it's more about continuing to adjust the relationship to it and orient around it to use it when it's helpful and not use it when it's not helpful. All right. So I'm going to pause there. I'm going to ask a couple journaling questions about this, and then we'll open up for some shares. First question. Do you usually recognize fear as, well, oh, sorry, wrong question. how have you approached fear in the past? Have you seen it as a problem and something to be fixed? Have you gotten excited about it? Has it come up and it's like, oh my gosh, there's something wrong? So either for yourself or with clients, how have you been approaching fear? And I'll also add to that, what have you believed about fear? What are some things that you've believed about fear? All right, let's pause here. I'd love to hear some shares either on some of that journaling or around everything I was sharing in terms of befriending versus slaying and the purpose of fear. Benjamin. Oh, did you want to share? You took yourself off mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, my sound wasn't working. I was trying to just be on my computer. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I can share. I think that I work with fear very similar to the way that you're describing, that it is a normal sort of part of life, and also that it's protective, because I've worked with so many folks that have pretty severe trauma throughout my career. And so fear is like a pretty big part of the work that I do. And also, I would say, frankly, has been a really big part of my career, because I've been, this work is so vulnerable that, like, I don't remember a time that I wasn't fearful, frankly, about every single thing I've done. Like, literally, a new job, a new hire, a new client, a new, like, literally everything. And so fear has just been, in my world, just very, very, very present. And then growing up, in a rural town in Northern California myself, and experiencing trauma myself, and isolation and feeling trapped with one set of family, like so much fear, right? And lots of alcoholism and substance abuse and scary situations as a young child, like fear's been everywhere in my world. And so that's been, I think, a real gift in a lot of ways for me. Like I've seen fear as a gift in my life. And also, so then I see it that way in my clients. And yeah, I think that the places that I get a little bit stuck with fear sometimes, like I'm thinking about, some particular clients or one particular client who, or actually it's not just her. I think that sometimes I get the sense that, that some folks that I work with sort of hold on a little bit to their like symptomology, their presentation, like their anxiety or their whatever it is, as a protector, right? And so then fear is sort of the other side of that. And it just feels like really big, right? And so the way that I work with it is like in little ways, but I don't know, this is kind of what I'm really excited to explore and deepen in, is how, what are more ways I can just sort of open that up and hold and support people to kind of like shift through that, like letting go of this, like me is this diagnosis, or me is this person who's always been anxious, so I always will be anxious, or me is this person who has PTSD, so will always have PTSD, and that's just the way I am, like this identification with, anyway,
yeah,
that's what I'm excited to work with. So this, I love this topic so much.
Yeah, I can tell, and you have so much experience and wisdom on it. Yeah, and hopefully, and the resistance archetypes, I think they'll both, you'll see how they work together. Yeah, I'm excited for you to.
Yeah, it's cool. Good.
And Amika is saying in the chat, I love the idea of befriending. In the past, I've always seen fear as something to fight through. Even though I learned different ways in the last years, the interesting thing is that fear disguises itself. And I just realized it was fear when on the other end of it. Yes, it's so true. And we'll see when we get to the resistance archetypes, they're very related to fear. That I'm bringing it up because it speaks to what Anamika just shared and a little bit what Anshin just shared. Sometimes in order to not look at the fear, we show up tightly clinging as the victim or as the judge or as the know-it-all, you know, like in these different ways, and they wrap themselves around the fear and are great distraction mechanisms from actually then getting to the fear. So over this module, we're going to look at like working with the fear itself. Next module, we're going to look at how to loosen up that outside area. Kelsey is saying, yes, I'm really wondering how we actually can hold a client through fear without shutting down. Yes, because I find that even though I'm very aware of fear, I can still have an automatic shutdown. Yes, like a trauma response that I haven't found a way around. Yes, absolutely. And you'll see next week as we start learning the technique that it's as much about staying regulated in our systems as we move through the technique as it is the content of the technique itself. And that's something that helps with this so much. Brynn is saying, when I felt fear in the past, shame and embarrassment come afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. You're not alone in that. And that's, I'm glad that you're bringing that forward too, Brynn, because that's something that we want to be aware of can be present for our clients, you know, that they, again, and this is why our energetics and how we lead and how we hold all of this is so important, because a client might experience fear and then even feel shame in or embarrassment in the container with us, right? So how we approach this can make so much of a difference. All right, let's keep on going. All right, here's another foundational piece that I find really helpful for just understanding and approaching fear. There's always something to risk. There's always something to risk. When we create a goal for ourselves that is stretchy, or when we are in a situation for ourselves that's stretchy, there's always something to risk. There is always some relationship, some long-held belief, some value, some object, some idea about ourselves that is at risk. It's kind of like jumping off a cliff. If you're at the edge of a cliff and you really want what's on the other edge, you really want to make it to the other side. That's where your goal is. That's where your next place is. But in order to get there, you have to take the risk of leaving where you are right now to get to the other side. When you make a commitment to go towards a goal, or when you're considering making a commitment to go towards a goal, it's like taking a jump. And that's when so many fears can start to come up, because they're associated with what am I going to have to risk outside of myself or inside of myself in order to get to this new place. And that's kind of where a lot of the fear can come as well. So one kind of cognitive approach to fear is through risk assessment in some cases. What's the actual risk of taking this action? Is this risk worth taking with what I might was up for grabs here? That's kind of like this, similar to stretch, risk, or die that we looked at a couple weeks back. Or we can use that stretch, risk, or die exercise there. Sometimes just bringing awareness to how big the actual risk is on a scale of 1 to 10, how big is this risk? Because it can be feeling maybe like a 10, but when a client looks at it cognitively, they can see it's a 2 or 3. And just that can start to be helpful as well. So that kind of leads us to another important concept, which is that in a certain way, our egos like to be comfortable. In a certain way, our egos like to be comfortable. So this is the part of yourself that might like to think that where you are right now is safe. And in order to move to where you want to be, you're not going to be safe anymore. You're not going to be comfortable anymore. Even if you don't like where you are right now, even if there's a part of you or your client that hates their current career situation or financial situation or relationship situation, whatever it is, there is a way that we also find it comfortable and safe. we can't have the comfort and the safe and also take the risk and go for the new thing or the next place. We can't have both. It's kind of like you're sitting on your couch watching TV, you're really comfortable, but you know you really want the ice cream in the fridge. And so you have to get up off the comfort of the couch to get the ice cream in the fridge. So again, like there's always something to risk. And our egos generally don't like risk. They want to stay in a safe place because the safe place may not be what feels great, but at least you know what it is. It's something that you're familiar with. And oftentimes what ends up happening is we end up sabotaging our dreams or our goals or what we want next, what we really want, in order to be able to hold on to the safety and the security of the familiar. But here's the thing. Let's just be honest for a moment about safety and security. There really is no such thing. There is and there isn't, right? The thought that we can do something to remain safe and secure is a lie that we tell ourselves to trick ourselves into thinking that it's always going to be okay. But the truth is that life is always changing. In order to actually be alive, we're always moving and growing and risking safety and security. Yes, of course, we can root down like trees and be grounded and connected. And we do want to do that. And we do want to help our clients feel grounded and connected. But we're still always, whether we're going after the goal or not, time is moving forward. And because of that, we're moving, we're changing. We don't know what the future holds. We're always partially in the mystery. And in that movement of life and in that mystery, there's never full security. There are no guarantees about anything, not about our health, not about our relationships, not about our homes, not about our bank accounts, not about groups we lead, not about our client work. Nothing is actually secure. And I don't mean that as a bummer or a downer. I really see this as part of the beauty and the risk of being alive. Anything can happen. That's scary, but it's also awe-inspiring and amazing. All right, let me pause there. What's feeling important? What are you seeing? What's clicking for you? Kim.
That last part on safety was just mind-blowing because I definitely tell myself that staying wherever is safe and secure, and to hear that that doesn't really exist is like, whoa, what? It's just interesting how our mind works and the logic and creates all these convoluted thoughts that keep us in one.
Yes, completely. It's a trick. And like Julie is saying in the chat, it's about that inside job of feeling that security and that safety on the inner level. But the outside is never guaranteed, even if we do nothing, right? It is not guaranteed. Yeah. Powerful. Good. I'm glad that's resonating. Caroline.
Yeah, everything that you're saying, I've had this conversation twice today. So I talk about this a lot with my clients for sure. And I think that, I guess that's just what I felt compelled to say. I think that there is you know, we create safety with our thoughts. It's an internal job. And yeah, it's just kind of a crazy concept to think about, that there is no place where we can find it except for here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's both like, oh, and also exciting. I think both, yeah. Like we get to create that internally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we're in the mystery, but we have that internally for right. ourselves. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Monique.
I love what you just said right now about the excitement, because I'm sitting here and I'm feeling like we're at a campfire and we're just like chatting really softly and closely about fear. We don't want to really poke it so much. And I'm like, I love fear. I am excited by fear. When other people are facing a, you know, fearful situation or a question in life, I get excited for them because I know that there's big, massive change and growth from it. And for myself, I mean, I like to think of myself as a risk taker and a change maker, and I've done some crazy things. So whenever fear like tries to come at me, before my first reaction would have been like, oh, hell no. Do you know who the F I am? I have done A, B, C, D, E, F, G. No, you are not. No, this isn't happening. But then post-COVID, now I've got anxiety. And so anxiety is mixing, is blending together with my fear. And so this is where I'm trying to develop a new relationship and separate them and befriend, so to speak. So I feel glad that you said the word excitement, because I was sitting here like, am I the weirdo? Because I kind of enjoy this.
No, not at all. And like what I love that you're sharing this. And what I want to suggest for everyone is that this is actually how we want to approach fear when it comes up for our clients, for us to kind of get excited, because it means like, ooh, there's something rich and ripe here that is like coming, and there's change that's possible. So instead of being the kind of practitioner that's like, oh no, fear, or like hiding, or I've done something wrong, or this is gonna suck, or whatever it is, to actually be like, ooh, this is opportunity for such richness and growth. Good. All right, just check the chat for a moment. Lisa's asking, does our mind create the illusion of safety? I don't know that I'm like qualified to answer that, but I would just say, in my opinion, yes. Like our minds do, so that we can get through the day. But like, you know, like I said earlier, it's just anything can happen. Julie's saying, what I'm hearing is that we are normalizing the broad expanse of our human experience. And in doing so with our clients, we create safety. Beautiful. Yes. My dad always said, nothing is certain except that nothing is certain. This has helped me in not catastrophizing, but rather meeting what is to the best of my ability in the moment. Nice. Okay, good. Let's keep on going. Sarah's saying, it feels like there's a dialectical tension. As coaches, we are creating safety in order to look at fear. I love that. Yes. Yes. I don't think I know what dialectical means. So I'm just going to focus on tension. I don't know. Like the tension, I don't see it as a negative thing. It's almost like I see it as the safety is the container that allows the fear to be looked at, kind of like the sun creating that container, as well, like just the loving on it, the being with it, the normalizing it, yes. And it's like, yes. So anyway, I love your comment. Yes. Okay. And then I just want to remind everyone of an acronym that we've probably all heard before, which is the acronym for fear, false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. Now, sometimes it is real, right? Which is why we want to have our smoke detectors so that we can assess when it's a real fire in the house. But oftentimes when we work with our clients, what the false evidence appearing real means is that when we start to feel the fear, we're actually looking for, we're searching for, we're even bending some facts to find evidence, any kind of evidence in any little experience, scenario, email, glance, et cetera, to confirm the fear of the then and there without realizing the resources available in the here and now. But the evidence that we find usually isn't real. It's false evidence. So for example, one of my big fears that I've been working with for many decades and that I will continue to work with for many decades is that I have a fear of people really hating me. Like they just really, really not dislike me personally, but I don't know, I can't explain, like they just like hate me kind of thing. When I am not in good relationship with this fear, when I am not checking the fear, it can motivate a lot of self-sabotage. And I can find evidence that people hate me in anything. Like someone didn't email me back right away. That person definitely hates me. Or if I'm in the fear on a particular day and at the end of teaching a class, people aren't falling over themselves and being like, that was such a great class. Oh, those people definitely hate me, right? Or if I'm in the middle of a launch and I've sent out a couple emails and people haven't bought just yet, oh, everybody in my community definitely hates me, right? None of that is actual evidence of the fear. It could mean so many other things. But when I'm not checking it, when I'm not befriending the fear, that's the only thing that all of those pieces mean. They are evidence to confirm it. Let me pause there. What are you seeing? What's feeling important? What's resonating here? Yeah, Anita's saying, my fear is that I'm so annoying and everybody thinks I'm so annoying. Exactly. Julie's got the same one as me. Who else? What are you seeing? What's feeling important? I'd love to hear a voice or two on this. Or else I'll think you hate me. No, I'm kidding. Wendy.
I definitely do not hate you, just to be clear. I know what I'm about to tell you is, it's something we laugh at in my family. It is very funny, but there is a point. I have two stepdaughters and we love to play the what if game. Their favorite thing is around zombie apocalypse. You know, it's very important. Yeah. So I've asked them multiple times. I'm like, well, I don't know. Do you think I would make it? And their answer is always, if you are in fear and you go to terror, you freeze, we're going to have to leave you behind. I'm afraid you're not going to make it. If we can get you to from fear to pissed off, we're all going to survive. which is hilarious, but also I think it really speaks to, you know, how we translate fear in our body and our perception and what just our reaction physically to to whatever the perceived or real fear is, can take us in so many different directions. And yeah, it's something I actually enjoy working with, because I also have developed quite a bit of anxiety since COVID started that became pretty regular for me and was not something that I was used to. So really taking a look at fear and, is it real? Is it perception? Like, what is the level of fear on the scale of 1 to 10? Has been really helpful for me to kind of lower the anxiety and get a little bit more realistic with what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. First of all, I love that game that you play with your stepdaughters. It's so good. And there was something that you said, I can't remember exactly what it was, but that made me want to share this. And we'll see this next week as we get into the technique, but I think it speaks to something that you said, which is that part when we're working with fear with ourselves or with our clients, part of what we're doing is creating just enough space so that the client can get a little space, like to see that the fear isn't all of them, to see that the fear is a part of them. And when we can see that the fear isn't all of us, when we can have that recognition and we can see and feel that it is a part of us, then we are in a much better position to make a different choice. And we make that different choice, right? So when we get some of that space, and part of that is from working with the body, our systems regulate enough for the moment to see the fear for what it is, not to see it as it's all of me. We have those moments of regulation in tandem with the fear, like the fear is there, but we are regulated all at once. And then we can make a different decision. Right. And that's part of the work here. Back to that process of change, doing this and then doing this and doing this, opening that door more and more, making a series of different choices, if that different choice is right for us. And then training at the same time, training us to get more and more regulated, even in the face of the fear. That will all make more, if that's not making full sense, that will all make more sense as we go through everyone. But I just wanted to like lay that out now, because that's really what we're going for here. And even a cognitive question, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a risk is that for you? That's starting to create a little space already. Good. Lisa.
What I'm noticing is a lot of this for me around safety and security, it was so subconscious. It was like it was really beneath the level of my awareness. And I was doing some deeper work on this recently, and I realized I had this safety and security thing going on at the same time as I was trying to grow my business and become more visible. And I hadn't seen, I don't know if that's a dialectical something or other, but it was like, one was pulling me in the other direction, but I really wanted to be comfortable and safe and secure. And it is such an illusion. I'm just excited and mortified all at the same time that I haven't seen it for so long. How could I not see that for so long? I mean,
because we're not taught to. We're just not taught to. That's why. Yeah, I'm so glad you're seeing it now. Good.
Yeah, it's hard though. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard when we think that we know how to work with these things with our clients, and then it kind of comes back and becomes so obvious that it's so present with ourselves as well. Yeah.
It's so true. You know, this is one of the reasons why I always like, I think there's so many similarities between coaching and parenting. And I'm always, I mean, I cannot tell you how much I am normalizing fear and my ability to be okay, even if I'm scared, to my kids. Like all the time, I'm like, oh, that scares me. And right, like I'm so conscious to normalize versus pathologize, because we just don't talk about this enough in our culture.
True. It's so lovely to have this conversation, though, Joanna. Thank you. You've lit up today, tonight. I really see you lighting up. It's just wonderful.
All right, let's keep on going. There's still a little bit more. All right, I want to share some of the most common, and the best way to say it is underlying fears. This is not an exhaustive list, but I find it's helpful for as a practitioner to kind of know, like, there's even if the fear is I'm scared to send that email, or I'm scared to do the dating app, or, you know, whatever the task is, there's an underlying fear underneath it, if you will. And it's good as practitioners for us to kind of know what some of them are. We always want to ask our client, you know, identify, confirm, use our, you know, all of that, but it's kind of good to have that backdrop. So I'm going to go through some of these pretty common, what I have found in range of human behavior, pretty common underlying fears. Any kind of symptom or surface fear can fall into one of these categories depending on the person. Number one, fear of failure. Fear of failure can sound something like, I'm simply not going to be able to make this happen. I'm going to fail at it, right? So not moving forward because we're scared that we're not going to make it happen, that we're going to fail at it. And this is why the fear of failure, I have found, is such a big one. Failure in one task is somehow unconsciously equated with being a failure as a human being. It's like a person's value and worth is predicated on not failing. And so in order to not fail, they just don't do it, because it would mean something about them and their worth. That makes sense? There's another pretty common underlying fear, the fear of not being good enough, not being smart enough, not being savvy enough, not being pretty enough. The design of that thing isn't good enough. That coaching session wasn't good enough, right? This can come up around anything not being enough. And I still have not yet met a single human being who doesn't have this one rolling around inside of themselves in one way or another. So sometimes when a client is stuck, holding themselves back, not taking action on something, it might be this fear of not enough, not being good enough. Here's another one. This one might sound a little funny at first, the fear of success. So fear of failure, easy to understand, right? But fear of success. But check this out if you have maybe some of this going on for yourself. Do you have any preconceived negative notions of what it means to be successful? Or any judgment around what kind of people successful people are and what they have to do to get there and what it means about them? Sometimes a client or for yourself, whatever their notion about success is going to be at odds with what their values are. because of what they've seen modeled in the past or in the culture around success around a particular thing. And then even though they want something, they want to be successful at it, they want to move forward, they will hold themselves back because what it means to be to them, what it means to be successful in that theme, in that thing. That makes sense? Okay. There's another fear. Fear of being seen or being visible. The fear of being seen or being visible. For some people, even if there's a part of them that really longs to be seen, let's say visible in your business or whatever it is, there's also another part that is very scared of being visible. And usually that's because the more visible you are, the more open you are to criticism. The more you might have to stand up for yourself or your values or your work or what you believe in. For some people, that fear of being seen is related to being scared that if they're seen, they'll look too big. And other people might think, who does she think she is? To do that, to be that, to try and make that happen. Caroline's asking in the chat, is the fear of being visible more common with women? That's a really good question. I've certainly worked with a lot more women than men, so I can really only answer it from that point of view. But I mean, I think culturally, women, there's a lot of preconceived notions about what it means to be a woman who is visible. We've seen that in politics. Like we saw that, I mean, not to bring politics into it, but we saw that with Hillary Clinton and how she was, you know, people hated her for being seen, for being big. And so much of that had to do with who she was as a woman. So I definitely think, like in patriarchal culture, there are certain norms that can make it scarier for a woman to be visible. This is just my opinion, by the way. If anybody else wants to like add or share, it's not the truth with a capital T. All right, here's another fear. The fear that you don't deserve what you actually want. The fear that you don't deserve what you actually want. So this one can sound something like, I just don't deserve to have a great relationship or have a thriving business or to get my book published. So it's like there's this desire, but there's this uncertainty that you actually deserve this thing. Here's a biggie that, again, so many of these are hidden. They don't come, you know, like you sort of have to look for them. Here's a biggie for people. They may not even realize it. This one and the next one. The fear of losing connection with self or loved ones. The fear of losing connection with self and loved ones. So if there is any fear that if you go after what you want or achieve what you want, and somewhere in that process, you'll become so busy that you get lost in the work or like in one way or another, it disconnects you from people that you love, or it disconnects you from yourself. Somehow you'll lose your true self, or you'll outgrow a loved one. I see this a lot sometimes when I work with entrepreneurs whose business gets to be a certain point And they're scared if they take it to the next level that they're going to outgrow their spouse. I also have seen this a lot with artists, you know, people that have art, like the heart of an artist, this fear of like, if I get too famous, I'm going to sell out, which is kind of like, then I'm going to be disconnected from myself and my values. And Julie's asking, would you say that most of our fears are tied up in our self-worth? I actually don't. Like, so this last one that I mentioned, not totally tied up in self-worth. I think a lot of them are for sure, but not all. Here's another one that's related. The fear of surpassing a loved one. The fear of surpassing. So it's a little bit like the outgrow, but it's slightly different. So this fear revolves around a parent or a sibling or a mentor or a friend or an employer who you feel very loyal to, so loyal to that one or the family code. There's part of you that fears that if you go after what you want or achieve what you want, you'll, in doing so, you'll break that unspoken code or rule between you and this other person or between you and the family. So instead you hold yourself back so that you don't get more successful from those folks. That makes sense. Fear of getting hurt. There's a fear of getting hurt, and this other one is separate, but related, the fear of others becoming angry at you. So if I put myself out, for example, if I put myself out there and really ask for the rates that I'm ready for, people will laugh at me and I'll be hurt, right? Or if I really charge what I'm ready to charge, people are going to get angry at me. Or people will reject me. So it's the fear of getting hurt, fear of rejection, and then fear of anger from others. All right, let me pause there. That list was not exhaustive at all, but it's kind of some of the places where a lot of things can kind of group into or fall into. I'd love to hear, and I'll just say, like, part of the fear of getting hurt or rejected is the fear of being abandoned too. I'll be abandoned. I'll be all alone. What's clicking for you? What are you seeing? Which ones are you like, oh yeah, that's me? Or what other ones would you like to add to the mix here? Who wants to share? I'll also just add that a lot of times, if we're not in the here and now, and we're really in the then and there, any of these fears can actually feel like, or like the natural conclusion of it can feel like, and I'm not going to survive because of this, right? It is like a threat to survival. Brynn.
The fear of being visible totally resonates with me. And it has for the longest time. Finally, this year, I think I've befriended it and have stepped out and have become more visible and like doing circles or what have you. But it dawned on me is that the witch wound actually might be part of this too, of being visible and then being criticized or persecuted for whatever I'm feeling. And I loved how you said, you know, standing in or stepping into like my values, my morals and being challenged on it. Totally hit home. I'm like, ooh, I didn't even think about that part, but that is part of that fear of like, someone's going to say, well, you believe this or you believe that type of thing.
Yeah.
So yes, that was great.
Absolutely. Yeah. I find that one, even though like for myself, I've worked through much of it. Like I said, they never go away. And that one totally, like when I, sometimes when I'm about to write something very controversial, either to my newsletter community or social media posts, like that comes up like, ooh, and then I'm going to be seen and I'm going to have to defend. And what does that mean? Right. It can come up so strongly.
Yeah, totally. In social media, like you said, like I appreciate what you write, Joanna, often, but I can understand where you're coming from. But me, I just make two sentences on a little image and I'm like, ah, so yeah, it's something that I have to really be conscious of and work on.
That's what I'm going to say. It's good. Even just the being aware of it as you go to post, right? Just that awareness can, even without the befriend your fear technique, like all of that, but just that awareness alone can maybe create enough space to be willing to share what you want to share, click, post, right? And then you just keep on
coming. It is.
To the awareness.
But it's surprising how much time it takes for me to coach myself and talk myself through it. Okay, Brent, it's okay. But I really do. Like it's, I'm coaching myself. I'm like, it's all right. You got this, you can do this, but it just adds on like 15 extra minutes just to catch that post or, you know, but anyways, it's good. Thanks.
Good. Who else? What else are you seeing? Which ones are you resonating with? What's feeling important? What do you want to add? Who wants to share? I feel like there are other thoughts out there.
I would add something or observe something. In support groups I run for parents whose teenagers are in some level of treatment for behavioral or mental health issues, they'll come into group, and especially parents in the beginning who are very fearful will see some other parents almost in a sort of I'd call it like a middle stage where there's some growth and a sense of peace, and they'll aspire to that and start to be more willing to do the work. But then as those parents who are in that sort of more the middle zone kind of are about to bring their child home, all these wild fears, it's like suddenly the storm happens all over it. And it's, so I guess I'm really seeing the spiral nature of fear.
Yes. That's part of that process that I was talking about, and how it doesn't go away.
Right.
It doesn't go away. It's just, now is the next stretch, right? That next stretch, those parents, or they're bringing their kid home. Yeah. And so it comes back up again. And I mean, really it's just the more you can make friends with it, and the easier, it's not so then it doesn't, we're not making friends with it so that it doesn't come up anymore. We're making friends with it so that when it does come up, we can move through it with more ease and understanding.
Yeah.
But the goal is not for it not to come up anymore. And I think that's a really important point that like we have to come back to and remember and remember and remember, right? Again, like it's not going away. It's just, it's kind of like, think about this, we're so detached from the seasons in our modern culture, but it's kind of like, the winter is always going to come, right? But how are you going to move through the winter? Are you going to have harvest that you have saved to get you through the cold winter months? Are you going to like rest? Are you going to try to fight against it? Are you going to freak out because the winter's like, it's always going to come. It's always coming back around, but how are you moving through it? And then how are you learning from each time how to move through it better and better and better?
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I've never, like, we've talked a little bit about metaphors and maybe mantras, maybe not, but this is the first time I've really seen it almost like when you're doing rock climbing and you get more and more secure about your hold and like, can you stretch your leg out that way? Not that I've ever rock climbed, by the way, but I can see that you would need to kind of keep on reassuring yourself and having, and I guess it was Julie that talked about it's internal. I can't remember the wording, but
yeah.
The self-soothing.
Yes. And that self-security and safety. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Caroline.
I am really feeling this personally today. I'm making some decisions about my business, and it's just like visceral experience for me right now. So many of these things are coming up for me, and the idea that to embrace it with excitement, that there's something on the other side. I understand it cognitively. I do. But the devil I know is like, feels safe. And I'm in the river of misery or something right now. So
yeah, no, I hear you. Well, and that's why you'll see the befriend your fear process is a somatic process, because it's very rare that we can handle it only on the cognitive is really important, the intellectual awareness, but because we feel fear in our body, the process almost has to be also activate the body level. And actually we'll all see as we learn the process activates all four levels of learning and processing. They're all working together. For right now, I'm just sending you love. I know what it's like to be in that place.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jennifer's saying in the chat, having to do with the safety concept that we discussed earlier, I have a fear of the unknown. I sometimes rather stay in a less than ideal situation than to risk moving into something I haven't experienced before. Absolutely. That is another one of the fears, like the fear of the unknown or the fear of not knowing how it's going to work out or not knowing how to do it, right? Because of that safety piece. All right. Take a moment and write down what you're taking from our time together today. What's one or two big takeaways for you? I'd love to hear some last takeaways. Your homework this week, you'll have some worksheets, but partner catch up, partner practice is just catch up or continuing with everything we've been working on. We'll learn the technique next time and then you can start practicing it. What are you taking away? Who wants to share?
I want to share.
Great.
So what I am taking away is how good fear feels when I really see it and I honor it. Mm-hmm. As Monique said at the beginning about anxiety, when she spoke about anxiety, I don't remember exactly how she said, but when she spoke about it, I felt like my anxiety in me is being seen. And I'm feeling anxiety now when I'm talking. Am I articulating this good enough or not? But as I speak about it and I let it be seen, it starts to feel good. And I remember hearing, I think, from Guy Hendricks, and he heard it from someone else, that fear is... or anxiety, that anxiety is excitement without breathing. And when you let more of the breath in, it turns into an excitement. And I also remember hearing from some other teacher that it's sometimes hard for women to contain joy. And that's why we feel so much excitement. And then I'm thinking, excitement is joy without breathing. And if I add more breath in, I can feel more joy. And then it goes from fear to joy very fast.
I love that. I love that.
But I still want to like hug and love fear. It feels so good to hear how fear is normal and healthy and here to protect us. And it feels so, yes. It feels so acknowledged and so good in the body. So thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and there's another thing that I want to say about this paradox about fear and safety and security. It's like we are creating with our clients space and safety so they can look at their fears, and we look at the fears so they can feel more safe to do the actions. And I feel like it's so juicy to be in this paradox of like being afraid and being safe at the same time.
Yes.
Living the life.
Yes. I think that's a beautiful note for us to end on, because that's actually where we're going, is to like, again, that the fear and the internal safety can live together at the same time, and we can move forward even in the face of fear. So beautifully said.
Thank you.
Well, I am excited for you all to walk with all of this week and just let it, you know, metabolize it, integrate it. Follow your fear this week, track it. Notice when it comes up and see if you can just start to be like, oh, that's fear. Not just like, oh, I can't do that. Or, oh, I'm going to write like, just like, oh, that's my fear of that, right? Just see if you can create a little space throughout the week with it. All right. So, and next week we'll get into the technique, thinking about all of you, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.